I do have to tell you that someone who should be ashamed shared with me a little story that I hope is not true. The story was that on an anniversary, an impending anniversary, a wife said to her husband, "I put up with you for this long, and on our anniversary morning, I expect to walk out to the driveway and see something that go from 0 to 200 in just a matter of a few seconds." And she walked out and found the bathroom scale. As I say, that person should be ashamed, and I should be ashamed for repeating it. Well, the Waltons, you can thank for the joke, too. And I'll let you guess which one. The other thing is that this morning, those of you who haven't been to church, those who will know about more about this later, there's going to be a look at the idea of poise. And I found myself thinking as I listened to Travis this morning of a moment at the Bonaire Exxon station. This is enough years ago that it's unlikely that there's any witness that will remember it, but this was back when we would occasionally play touch football games with the faculty and the students. I'm wise enough not to do that anymore, but there was one morning where I was supposed to bring the football, and so I realized the football was soft, and I had the little needle that would let me fill the thing, and I went to the Bonaire Exxon, and I read carefully on the side of the football, it said inflate to 9 pounds. And so I put the needle in, took the hose, put the thing in. There's Saturday morning, full of traffic, people lined up to try to get gas. I don't know what was going on to make it, but it was packed with people. And I'm sitting there, and the gauge just seemed like it didn't want to go past 7. And it was just almost to 8, but just really struggling to get there. And I suddenly realized that next to the 7, which I could still see, was a tiny little 0. And next to the 8, which I could see coming into view, was a tiny little 0. And I took the thing off so that you could hear the air hissing out. But it exploded in my hand. It was a noise that sounded like a gunshot. And everybody who was out of the car, and a lot of ones in the car, turned and looked to see me standing there like the Statue of Liberty. Pieces of football raining down like shrapnel. Sometimes poise is thrust upon you. There's just, they all started clapping. There's very little you can do. All right, pop quiz. We have been looking for several weeks at... Yes, but what's the latest? John says lists, but what is the latest list? In the New Testament, the word servant is found, in King James anyway, 14 times with an adjective or a modifier describing some aspect of servants. And there are a total of 14 of these. We have 2 left. And so we're turning now to the next to the last one. And you'll find this mentioned in Matthew 25. So if you'll turn to Matthew 25, we'll read a little bit there. I will tell you that there's a parallel to this that's shown in Luke 19. And in Luke 19, there's a little different twist on this. If I happen to remember how to do it, to remember to do this, I will draw your attention to the little twist. It's very interesting. But we're going to start at verse 14. The focus verse is down in verse 21 and down in verse 23. And then in contrast, in verse 26. So we'll see those 3 things. The 2 words that are applied to servants in this part, we've already looked at one of those. That's why we're not taking both of the terms. Jesus is talking in verse 14 about the kingdom of heaven, and he says to the people who are listening, "It is like a man about to go abroad who summoned his servants and entrusted his property to them." To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, each in proportion to his ability. Now, at the time that Barclay was writing around about this, he pointed out correctly that talent is not so much a value as much as it is a weight. And if you had that much silver, that weight of silver, at that day it would have been worth 250 British pounds. And so a lot of times you'll see where there's been a British influence on translation, they'll translate this into pounds or dollars or something like that. But a significant amount of money. He then set out on his journey. The man who received the 5 talents promptly went and traded with them and made 5 more. The man who had received 2 made 2 more in the same way, but the man who had received 1 went off and dug a hole in the ground and hid his master's money. A long time afterwards, I don't know if that phrase is in there for deliberate attention, but I do note that it says a long time afterwards, the master of those servants came back and went through his accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents came forward bringing 5 more. Sir, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. Here are 5 more that I have made. His master said to him, well done. And then what?
Good
and faithful servant. Now, we've already looked at faithful, and so consequently, by looking at this, we're going to focus on the word good as a modifier for servant today. Good and faithful servant. My translation says good and trustworthy servant. You have shown yourself trustworthy in small things. I will trust you with greater things. Come and join in your master's happiness. In the translation in Luke, the master said they went 10 talents, 5 talents, and either 1 or 2 talents or some corresponding proportions. And the one who first came back with 10 talents, I think he had 5 talents, he had made 5 more for a total of 10. The master says, you've been trustworthy in small things, I'm going to make you ruler over 10 cities. And so that's the proportion that they're talking about. In this he just says, you've shown yourself trustworthy in small things, I will trust you with greater things, come and join in your master's happiness. The man with 2 talents comes forward, and what happens? It's the same in the sense that what he had been entrusted, he doubles it. And what is the response that the master gives to him? Precisely the same response. He comes to the man who has 1 talent. Last came forward the man who had the single talent. This is verse 24. Sir, he said, I heard you were a hard man, reaping where you had not sown and gathering where you had not scattered. So I was afraid, and I went off and hid your talent in the ground. Here it is. It was yours. You take it back. But his master answered him, you wicked and lazy servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered. So you should have deposited my money with the bankers, and on my return I would have got my money back with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to the man who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has will be given more, and he will have more than enough. But the one who has not will be deprived even of what little he has. And as for this good for nothing servant, throw him into the darkness outside, where there will be weeping and the grinding of teeth. Now, 2 things that might be worth mentioning. One is that there was a point where the political scene was a little bit in upheaval. This is before the time that Jesus was born. And in the process, there were claimants to the right to rule over that part of the world, over what we would now call Palestine or Judah or Israel. And the result was that there was a person there who went to Rome to see the emperor to get the right to rule. And he did leave things that he had control of in trust with people that had been his servants. And when he came back, some of them had been faithful and some of them had not. So Jesus is actually making a local, and in that time, political reference, a lot of the commentators think. That is, the people would have recognized there's actual political history and commentary hiding in this. But the question is, what's the difference between good and good for nothing where servants are concerned? And I want to explore with you this morning the meaning of the word good in that context. So, I think Allison said that this one works.
Good. What does it mean?
The word good. I almost gave you clues to help you, and I don't think I want to help you.
I think, because I've written down wise. Sometimes, if you give us
a... Actually, wise was the second word, and we're going to look at that next week. Those are the two adjectives that remain.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, I don't think wise can go here if you would like.
No,
but I think we'll save that.
The word good.
There's some teachers in the room.
Uh-oh.
Right? Kitty still is a teacher and was a teacher. There's teachers in the room. I heard someone in the hall this morning, and I don't think they meant to be overheard, but it was a teacher. And the teacher said to someone else, you know the prayer I often pray? Spare me, God, from helpful students. Apparently, if you get them young enough, they want to help you do all kinds of things, and they sort of get in the way of your working one-on-one with somebody. I know that there are times when I have to tone down some of my students who want to answer every question just that quickly when I've called on somebody else. And the moment they answer the question, the person quits thinking about any answer they might give. They just grab that answer like it's a life ring in a torrid sea, and you know, that's all they can think about is that answer. What constitutes good in a person?
That's an excellent start, in my opinion. Although I've been told I shouldn't comment on answers as they come in. That's not a good thing to do.
Doing the right.
Kitty?
Performs well. That's kind of the same thing. Whatever the topic is.
Yeah. In a moment, we're going to take the word good and apply it back to servant. But let's get the general meaning of the word first and then come back and make that specific application.
Cooperative.
Dependable. Plays well with others.
Level of effort.
Yeah. High level of effort applies himself.
Way back in the back.
Better
than acceptable. I like that.
I like that.
Better. We saw the University of Richmond dance group on Friday night. There's a couple of young ladies in our church who are part of the what my parents' generation would have called the rhythmic movement group. I actually tried to call one of those families to say, you really ought to go see this. This group has been good. They went way beyond good on Friday night. They were just somewhere between excellent and terrific. And you could see that difference of quality. So, yeah, something more than just acceptable. And there was a hand over here.
What about work ethic? A good work ethic?
Yeah, can I tie that with this? It's another way to say this. A lot of times, there's a sign that the honor group used to put up at the university. They've taken most of these down. A few of them survived. One of them says, everything comes to him who waits. Everything that is that's left over from him who hustles. Am I speaking loudly enough?
And usable.
Useful and usable. Boy, that's a lot to do.
Don't put it up there, but you're worthy of being up there.
Uh-huh. you know the Bible verse that says, be ye perfect? Even as Christ is perfect. What does the word perfect mean in that verse? Do you guys know what that word perfect means?
To be mature.
Not quite.
To try. Really, it's more of like try to be perfect.
Not quite. And very not quite. It means fitted or suited to the task. It's not perfect in the sense of without blemish or without flaw. It is perfectly suited for the task. I commissioned a friend of mine. He refused to accept pay for it, so we did a little barter swap. I needed an addition to a piece of furniture in my house. And I know that this guy worked on wood, and I thought, you know, maybe he would be happy and enjoy doing this kind of thing. So I talked to him about it. I visited him in his workroom. He has more tools than I have. Way more tools than I have. Way, way more tools than I have. Why is that? Because when you're reaching for something, I think about Dave and that room where he's got that. When you got a job, I don't know what you said, but I don't think I want to know what you said. Different tools are fit for different things, and if you have the right tool, sometimes the job is easier. That was the point I was trying to make. I don't know the point she was trying to make. My tools gather dust. Okay? So what I'm saying is I think this one has deep spiritual applications. And I think that's a very useful addition to our list. Okay? What else?
And there's a little bit of difference between that and this one. They're connected, but enough of a difference that I don't think I want to put it down here as one more way of saying that.
Okay? What else?
It's kind of a conscious effort to be good. I don't have the words. If you're conscious of trying, striving for that, it's an attitude, kind of a conscience. Kind of a conscience.
Have I been good today? Yes. Striving to be good. Conscious, purposeful.
Have you ever had the opportunity to watch kindergarten teachers at work? I've got two of them in my family, and every once in a while I get the privilege of watching them. In a room full of children who are on the edge of being out of control. Take a group of kindergartners, that's the way they live, is on the edge of a whole room being out of control. There's this point of the teacher singling out one child and saying to that child in a calm and, the right word for today is poised voice, what are you doing right now? And the whole room falls silent as they think, what is he doing right now? And the kid thinks for a moment, and usually, when I've been present anyway, describes what they've been doing fairly accurately. At which point the kindergarten teacher says, is that what you're supposed to be doing? And the head hangs. No. And all of a sudden, the whole room sort of straightens out. Conscious of this. And not so much self-conscious, but purposeful, I think, is a good way of saying that. Aware that it is possible to be good and having that as a desired outcome. What else? What else goes on the list? Have you exhausted your list? Then let me help you a little bit. Is there a difference between being good and doing good? Is there a difference between being good and doing?
You can be a good person and never do a thing without affecting good in action.
Probably I could take issue with that, but I think the I think the world would probably agree with that.
You don't
not mean that. I do. Yeah. And I think it's sort of is goodness avoiding bad? That is it passive? Or is it active? Or more likely, are there degrees of both hiding in there?
Well, it's hard to be a good person. It's hard to be a good person and not do good things.
Ooh.
Very natural if you
may
are.
May I quote you on that?
I think you're having been here for a few weeks. I got to tell you.
It's hard to be a good person if you aren't doing.
Just like I used to tell my daughter when she was coming up, when we would talk about having Jesus in your heart, and when children start going to school and they start, other children start putting these things that you don't want in their life. Mm-hmm. And they come to you and they say, how am I supposed to combat this? How am I supposed to answer that? How, you know? And I used to tell her, if you have Jesus in your heart and he really is there, it will be easier for you to answer these things or combat these things or deal with these things than it would if he wasn't there. Because you'll have a different feeling about goodness than they do.
You just opened the door, and I want to speak to that. But right now, has been patiently
waiting.
And I testify.
Thank you. This statement might sound forgetting for a bit. There are a lot of people who strive to be good, okay? And I think they do because their focus is the reward in the hereafter, okay? Not just the reward on earth, but life after death. In other words, their eyes are on heaven. So I sometimes use this expression, and this is where the challenge comes in, and you think about it, that some people are so heavenly bound that they're no earthly good.
I've heard that.
Can you be so heavenly minded? Are no earthly good? Question mark. Is that?
Yeah, you put the question mark there.
That's a question. You're posing that question.
The Pharisee was put that quote because I was sitting here thinking. I was thinking of the word while you were going through all this and honest and. You've been picking on teachers today, so I understand. My students will say something to me out of their background, oh, well, you could do that, madame. And I look at them, and to me, what they're saying to me is not honest. And I come back and I will say to them, well, I wouldn't do that because I don't think it's right or something. And they always say to me, why not? And yet they're always asking me if they're good in my class. And they don't connect good and honest together. It's always connected. So what all of us are probably exhibiting one or more of these characteristics in our daily life, and it's unconscious. And I'm thinking our goodness, if it is in the Lord's will, is unconscious. We just it's part of us. It's who we are. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to fight. We don't have to say, well, I'm good because I am, because I fit one of the two of these categories.
I think that's a challenge paralleling right now. Okay?
Others want in on this? John, it's dangerous crap here.
How many of us have ever heard, how could God send that person to hell when he's done so many good things?
Okay. Catherine?
I just have a little anecdote. When my son was in first grade, talking about how important the students who always want help and not so helpful to the teacher, his son would always say to me when I would go to parent conference, David is very quick to answer whatever question I ask. Before I get the question out of my mouth, he's got a chance of. So we worked our way through all of this during the course of the first grade. And her comment at the end of the year on David's report card, David and I have enjoyed teaching first grade.
I need to tell you, in self-confession, that I identify with your son. I came home from school on the first day, my mother says. I, of course, do not remember this. And my mother said, "How did it go?" And I said, "It was awful. The teacher kept moving me from place to place. Wherever I sat, the other students would talk to me."
Jesus said to the rich young ruler, "No one is good but God," which I never thought he was good. Yet when he said, "I obeyed all the commandments," but then when the Lord challenged him, he saw his lack of goodness. Yet in Galatians, the fifth chapter, he lists the fruit of the Spirit. It's an interesting list. The evidence of the Spirit's work in our lives, it seems to me that's what that is. And one of those is goodness.
Mm-hmm.
On the list, poise isn't exactly there, but I thought it was built in. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faith, gentleness, self-control.
Somewhere between patience and self-control, I think poise might be hidden.
But goodness is there. And I think a lot of non-Christians do good things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I know some good people, so I think we're good people. I care about the people, Christians. But because I know I grew up with some Jewish neighbors in Miami that were very good people, good neighbors, good friends. So it becomes more complicated, this list.
This idea is very complicated. We've got about 5 minutes left. I want to take you a couple of places to try to help you with this. One of the places I want to take you is Matthew chapter 12. It speaks to some of the things that we were talking about being good versus doing good. I think it speaks in part to the challenge that Raynell and others raised with this. I'm looking at verse 33. Now, there's a couple of different translations here that do bring slightly different things into focus if you read them. I'm going to read out of my translation. And I don't know why they use the verb that they do in this translation. It doesn't say if a tree is sound. My translation says make a tree sound. And that's an odd wording to my mind. Mine says, make a tree sound. Most translations would have said good at that point, and its fruit will be good. Make a tree rotten, and its fruit will be rotten. For the tree can be told or identified by its fruit. You brood of vipers, how can your speech be good when you're evil? Words flow out of what fills the heart. Good people draw good things from their store of goodness in their hearts. Bad people draw bad things from the store of badness in their hearts. And I tell you this, for every unfounded word people utter, they will answer on judgment day. It is by your words that you will be justified, and by your words condemned. There's another verse that I tried to find and I couldn't find that talks about, and James sort of picks up and works with this, what you say stands in contrast with what you do. If what you say stands in contrast with what you do is probably the thing you ought to listen to. And you can almost see that up at the top. Look at the fruit that's produced. But he comes back and ties it into words. There is something about being good. There is something about doing good. There is something about wanting to do good things out of gratitude to God who made it possible for us to do good things. It's also possible to do good things because we want people to notice we're doing good things. And I think more than anything else, that's probably the tension that a lot of folks in church find. If you find yourself thinking about what you do and why you do it moment by moment during the day, I think you might be surprised at how often the motivation is, you know, if I do this, I'm going to look good. I say that about myself and not just yours. Now, I want to take you one more place, and that is to Ephesians. Actually, two more places. This is the first of two. Ephesians chapter 5. And two times in a section that starts around verse 8, a little phrase is used that I want to just call your attention to. Ephesians chapter 5, verse 8. You were darkness once, but now you are light in the Lord. Behave as children of light, for the effects of the light are seen in complete goodness and uprightness and truth. Now here's the phrase. Try to discover what God wants of you. Another translation says, try to find out what is pleasing to the Lord. And then it goes on to say, don't do these kinds of things. Don't do these kinds of things. Look at verse 15. So be very careful about the sorts of life you live. You lead like intelligent and not like senseless people. Make the best of the present time, for it is a wicked age. This is why you must not be thoughtless, but instead, and here's that phrase again, try to understand what God wants you to do. And then finally, those of you who were in church this morning will remember that the pastor had listed some verses out of Titus that he chose not to go to. Right? Okay. I want to take you to Titus as we finish, and I just want to show you a couple of things. Titus chapter 1, starting at verse 15. To those who are pure themselves, everything is pure. But to those who have been corrupted and lack faith, nothing can be pure. The corruption appears both in their minds and in their consciences. They claim to know God, but their works deny Him. They are outrageously rebellious and quite untrustworthy for any good work. Come down to verse 7 in chapter 2. You yourself set an example of good works by sincerity and earnestness when you're teaching, and by a message sound and irreproachable, so any opponent will be at a loss with no accusation to make against us. Set an example of good works so that when you speak, your words will be heard. Come down to verse 14. He, that is Jesus, offered himself for us in order to ransom us from all our faults and to purify a people to be his very own and to be eager to do good. Verse 1 of chapter 3, remind your people to be obedient to the officials in authority, to be ready to do good at every opportunity. Come to verse 8. This is a doctrine, this is chapter 3, verse 8. This is a doctrine you can rely on, and I want you to be quite uncompromising in teaching all this, so that those who now believe in God may keep their minds constantly occupied in doing good works. Not in thinking good things, but in doing good works. Verse 14, all our people must also learn to occupy themselves in doing good works for the practical needs of people and not to be unproductive. Being good and doing good are tied together. The words we say and the things we do are tied together. a good servant is not just morally blameless. A good servant is also productive, dependable, cooperative, one who does the right things. Tying those two things together in the mind of a child of God is a key thing towards spiritual maturity. God calls on us to be good servants. Yes?
My grandmother used to be a person who cared a lot of slaves, which I now look back on and realize was her way of this part of the world living. One of them was, pretty is as pretty does. In short terms, today, good is as good does.
This is not the right way to end this morning, but I remember the parallel I've heard for that. Beauty is skin deep, but ugly goes all the way to the bone. Goodness is not something on the surface. Goodness is something that emerges from what's inside. If the Spirit is working in your heart, goodness is one of the signals that that action is taking place. Goodness in who you are, goodness in what you say, goodness in what you do. Goodness recognized by people who are not godly as well as people who are. And you're probably the worst judge of whether you've met that test. Let's have a word of prayer as we go. Our Father, you call on us to be good, and Scripture teaches that that's one of the characteristics that is most important of you, that you are good. Teach us that goodness is something that comes as we get a closer relationship with you. We pray that your Spirit would be more and more alive in our hearts and in our lives so that who we are and what we say and what we do and based on what we hear in our worship service today, how we do and how we say things may bring glory and honor to you and may strengthen your kingdom by acting as a witness to bring people closer to you. We pray all this in your Son's name.
Where did that clipboard get to? The...
Yeah.